Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Expeditors Podcast, where we look at the logistics and freight forwarding industry through the lens of a global logistics provider. I'm your host, Chris Parker, and today's topic, building resilient supply chains in a post-pandemic era. Joining me today is Vice President of Supply Chain Solutions at Expeditors and three-time podcast guest champion, Ian Woo-hoo. Allison. Ian, welcome back for the third time. The latest, thanks, the greatest. Chris. Here you are.
Is that a record? Am I top of the pops?
Your name is on the belt right now. It's on its way over to you. You can wave that around.
I'll get a little trophy on my desk. I'll be very proud of it. Yeah.
Well, Ian, what has been going on in your world of supply chain solutions? How have the last couple months been, or the last year been for you? It's been a while.
It has been a while. Yeah, I always enjoy talking to you. It's a forever changing picture, Chris. You know, last year, only last month, somebody, sadly put a ship into a bridge in a port. So, and I would tell stories about parking ships in Suez canals, and we've had another example of that. And of course, pirates in certain parts of the world, taking ships on different routes. And there's always something going on. Panama Canal not having enough water in it. So,
yeah.
You know, that's just sort of nature, I guess, forcing the agenda. But of course, things around the world as well are constantly changing. So it makes my life and my career very interesting, because there's always something to talk about, always disruptions, either known or unknown, to take into consideration. So that's ultimately what we do when we talk to customers. We're always thinking about what we know and maybe what we don't know as well, and how do we plan for these things.
Going off of that, what would you say then excites you the most about your role and the work that you're doing?
Oh, it's fascinating to talk to different customers about their strategy. Of course, every customer, particularly if they're in different industries, so whether you're in the retail industry or the manufacturing industry, whatever industry or sector you're in, because everybody has their own way of working to a certain extent, automotive, healthcare, et cetera, there's different subtleties and requirements for each one. And ultimately, they've all got to get products from one place to another somehow, some way. But just having the variety of the challenges put on our plate, that's what I probably enjoy the most. It's been a fascinating journey, and I love it. I love talking to customers about how the experience that I or we have gained over the many, many years of doing this can apply to their needs, either sort of short term or long term. So and of course, customers are always happy to talk about it. They're always interested in trying to find solutions to known or unknown problems. So they're never going to say, "Oh no, I've got one," or I don't need this. So it's always a fascinating conversation.
All right, excellent. Well, let's go ahead and get jumping into the questions that I have here for today. I wanted to get an idea of where things have been since kind of entering this post-pandemic era. I know that for companies in 2023, there was an excess of inventory. And now in 2024, where are those companies finding themselves? What situations are they in right now?
Yes, you're right. Obviously, some of the things we've talked about previously, and that there was a large surplus of inventory that was sort of post-COVID, the bullwhip effect.
Right.
That COVID created, and everyone was consuming everything and anything, and of course the manufacturing was building up for that, and then of course it all stopped, but the production still continued, the inventory still continued to flow, and the inventory levels were either very large to start with or grew over the course of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So over the course of 2023, most companies stopped ordering things and started to consume their inventory levels that they had. That's a very generalized statement, Chris. obviously there were other industries that were still doing particularly well.
Yeah.
Some retailers, for instance, have had amazing years and have burnt through their inventory very quickly and are still doing extremely well. Certain technology companies as well have burned through that inventory very quickly and came out the other side of it, and are still continuing to do well. So it very much does depend on the type of product and category that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But as a generalized statement, most people in 2023 had enough inventory to be able to survive the demands against their business. Now, as we come into 2024, the marketplace is still somewhat depressed.
Right.
The economy is still somewhat depressed. We're seeing that from the volumes in all shipping companies and freight forwarding companies are sort of reporting against that. The volumes are down. Production is down. Cargo movements is down. Consumption is down. But from an inventory point of view then, so most companies are keeping sort of a pretty small amount of inventory based upon the lessons from the past. They don't want to have a bloat in their inventory portfolio, but also, you know, the demand for their inventory is pretty soft. So this year is probably more of a repositioning year, and they'll be ordering then with ordering new orders for 2025 in the hope that things will pick up and they'll be in a much better position for the next year as the economy starts to grow again, hopefully across the world.
What does a repositioning year mean to you? Is that a change in priorities? Is that a change in models in supply chain? How do you see a repositioning?
From an inventory point of view, it's probably more of a let's just wait and see.
Mm.
So let's not do anything rash. Let's make sure we've got the right inventory levels in the right place to service the business that we need. You know, our business used to be the X, and now it's Y. Not quite sure what it's going to be in 2025, 26. So let's kind of deal with the here and now and make sure then that our network is capable of dealing with the here and now. What will be interesting as we look further afield tends to be most of the work that we're looking at, which is, well, what are you going to be doing in 6-12 months' time?
Right.
Because most customers that we're dealing with are thinking, all right, well, we need to be starting ordering now for next year. What's our projections? What's our forecast going to look like? And how are we going to deal with those projections as far as a movement of freight and a movement of inventory? Plus everything else that gets thrown into the mix. You know, they may be buying a company, they may be launching new products. All of these things happen anyway, whether there's a soft demand from a consumer point of view or a very bullish one. So, you know, there's always things that are going on in the network that force change. So those would be kind of the things that we'd be focusing on at the moment.
For companies looking at the now and who are really focused on now this repositioning year, are they focused on cost reduction? Are they looking on ways to build more flexibility and resilience within their networks?
Both, no doubt.
Yeah.
Everybody's trying to cut their cloth accordingly to make sure then that they are as efficient and effective as they possibly can, given the circumstances. But they do need to be ready to expand and to flex, given that the volume is relatively low at the moment. And really, hopefully, fingers crossed, there is only one way it's going to go, and that's up. So from a demand perspective. So yes, they are sort of making sure that what they've got now is the best that they can do, but they are thinking about what they need for the future as well.
And what are those trends? Some that I think of are like I hear the words like nearshoring, friendshoring. What are other trends do you see with those included that are, I guess, taking hold or really grabbing the attention of companies as they're, you know, changing up their manufacturing?
Yeah, I think we've spoken about it a couple of times over the other podcast, Chris. You know, it started the sort of trade wars and things like that, and nearshoring started some time ago, which was a reaction to tariffs and trade restrictions.
Right.
I think it's moved on now. I read an interesting statistic the other day that I think 64% of the world's governments are up for re-election this year. So wow. When you actually put that into context of trade,
wow, yeah,
that's going to have some effect.
Yeah, yeah.
I know our colleagues in Onyx, for instance, are thinking about, okay, you know, well, if it could go this way or it could go that way, depending on who's elected, from a geopolitical perspective. Our colleagues in Tradewin will also be thinking, okay, well, based upon which government gets into power, they may be changing the rules and regulations based upon tariffs and duties involved in those areas as well. And then you've got my side. So that may then drive customers to migrate their supply. That may move the needle to, okay, well, we now need to move. It's no longer conducive for us to source from this particular country because, and I'm going to now start nearshoring or changing my sourcing strategy. And that's where we kick in, which is, okay, so where are you going to go? And how long is that going to take? And what are the lead times, the transit times, how much inventory, how many sailings, how much aircraft, blah, blah, blah. So it's going to be, 2025 is going to be a fascinating year. Again, it's going to be another fascinating year as far as the supply chain is concerned.
So then these conversations with, you know, people like you in supply chain solutions, they're going to happen regardless around across the industry, across, you know, manufacturers, across customers. Do you tend to find that people are in a good position to start these conversations? What are the challenges that they have? How conducive are those conversations right from the get-go?
You're right, Chris. It's pretty much built into their strategy now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas perhaps before, and again, a very popular topic that we've touched upon, is that a company would put their supply into one basket. They would source their products from one in order to be able to get a better price, for instance, as opposed to diversifying their supply. And their demand is still the same, but they then may look at two or three suppliers rather than the one. And just the economics would suggest, okay, well, you may not get a good price or as good of a price when you spread it across three as opposed to giving one company all your business. It's really a risk mitigation policy because of tariffs or because of natural occurrences, whatever it may be. I think most companies now have accepted post-COVID and the lessons that were learned through that era that they have to diversify their supply base. They can't afford and can't risk to have just one supply. So, you know, from a US perspective, a lot of companies will look at a sourcing out of Asia, of course. China is still by far and away the largest manufacturer of product, but the China plus one policies, so perhaps keep 80% of your supply out of China, but 20% somewhere else, but diversify that 20% to perhaps Europe or other Asian countries, or even into Mexico or Canada, things like that. So yeah, they'll have sort of definitely a plus one or even a plus two strategy built into their planning for the next few years.
So now that companies are building this into their strategy, then are there any challenges that slow down the process of diversification?
Well, it's not easy, you know, because everybody's trying to do the same thing.
Sure.
First and foremost. And for companies that are buying products from OEMs, you know, that are buying a product from a separate manufacturing entity, well, then I guess you can pick and choose to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go here, you can go here, you can go here, as long as that supplier is providing you with the right quantity and quality and ticks all of the boxes. But if you're vertically integrated and in effect build your own products,
right,
well, that's not so easy to move.
Right.
You will have to set up a new factory somewhere else. And that, of course, takes time, effort, money. And so really, you know, you're thinking, okay, well, I really do need to be planning for this in the next 2, 3, 5 years. So it's really a longer term strategy in order to be able to open new facilities in your own vertical integration policy.
What would you say are the important components to have at the ready in order to build those long-term strategies?
That's a great question. I think, you know, just a lot of planning from a forecasting point of view, understanding where your industry is heading, what the demands are going to be from your customer base. So, of course, there's a huge amount of input from the sales organization, the strategy organization of any organization to say where they're heading and why. And then from a supply chain perspective, they are then effectively reacting to that demand that's being positioned. Okay, so I understand what our business is going to be delivering or proposes to deliver in the future. I now need to create the right infrastructure to be able to deliver against that demand. And that's from a manufacturing point of view or a sourcing point of view and a delivery point of view. And then all the bits in the middle about, well, warehouses and transportation and everything else all fits into place. But ultimately, you know, the two bookends is where's my customers, how much am I going to sell to them, and where am I going to manufacture and get those products from? Mm-hmm. And then the rest in the middle all can fit into place.
Mm-hmm. And I imagine with that, like good, strong historical data is can help with that forecasting. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that is a challenge for companies?
Absolutely. And remains the same, Chris.
Yeah.
Again, you know, we keep ticking the same subjects.
And nothing's
that we've
changing.
About over
nothing's the, changing.
No, it's not. And yet all of the hype around AI and you know all the excitement around technology hasn't diminished. And yet data is still a huge challenge.
Right.
But for most organizations. I just this morning I was on a call with a client and they said again our data's terrible. I said, well, it might not be as bad as you think because I've seen some pretty terrible data. So it's a challenge because still a lot of companies have got multiple versions of SAP or using different software packages, and so of course each piece of data is in different places. So to bring all of that together to create the jigsaw puzzle and paint the picture that you want is still a challenge today, which is why, you know, we created our digital twin, which allows sort of different data to come in from all systems of record, regardless of who owns it. And then, we can paint that picture for the customer, which has proved very successful. Customers are very excited for the first time ever to actually have data in one place and cleansed and visible, and they can actually use it for meaningful decision making.
That kind of leads me to what I want to ask: was if collection of good data takes what I'm assuming is a lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of investment. What are companies able to do with what they have now? Are tools like digital twins able to take whatever data is available and develop solutions out of them?
Yes, I mean you can use the tool for multiple purposes. In our space, we use it for analytics.
Sure.
So we bring in shipment data that's happened already. We're not trying to solve the where's my cargo problem. Mm-hmm. There are far better and more advanced systems that can answer that question, particularly if you bring in IoT and bring in sort of the smart labels and things like that. That's very much the way that the world is moving in as far as sort of understanding a more sort of real time understanding of where their product is. From our side, we're using it as an analytics tool, so we're bringing in historical information, which allows us to understand, how did your supply chain behave historically, up to yesterday, for instance, if that's the cutoff. We're looking backwards in order to inform us about how we should then set the parameters going forward. Mm-hmm. So if everything worked perfectly in the last 3, 4, 6 months, well, then don't touch it. And as long as the business behaves the same way and that the supply and demand is the same, then leave it as is because it's working beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
Don't play with it.
Sure, sure.
However, I've never seen a supply chain that's done that before. So there's always something that can be improved, always something that may not be working in the most efficient or effective way. And therefore, that's something then that based upon the lessons of the past, you can fix for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be just asking somebody to do something that they were supposed to be doing, but they're not. So kind of business rules, or implementing change into your supply chain to improve the circumstances. Whichever one it is, you can then put that in place for the future. And hopefully then those things that you put in place will then deliver and you'll constantly improve your supply chain going forward and monitor those changes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we use our tool for. We assess the performance of the supply chain, and then if we need to look at any changes going forward, then there can be a lot of low hanging fruit in there. So you can tweak some of those changes pretty easily. But if you have to redesign your supply chain because it's truly not working very efficiently, or you know something's coming down the track, such as a new company being merged, or a new product, or a new supplier, or whatever it may be,
right.
Then you can build, you can plan for that through simulation and understand, okay, well, what's that going to mean? What will that look like? And then once you understand what it's going to look like, you can then execute against that plan and put that infrastructure in place for the future.
Sounds like an excellent way to take advantage of a repositioning year.
It absolutely is. It's been fascinating. Although a lot of customers are still very operationally biased at the moment. You know, they're still trying to figure out what's happening today. There's always operational challenges every day. Every supply chain director, shipping manager, whoever you're talking to, has always got day-to-day challenges. I'm sure you've had things that happened today, Chris, just like me, that you weren't thinking about or planning for. Mm-hmm. It happens. That's life.
Right.
So to put that aside and say, do you know what? Let's make a plan for 6, 12, 18, 24 months can be a challenge sometimes because the firefighting that happens in an operational environment takes precedence.
Right.
Of course it does. You've got to think about today sometimes. So that's the only challenge to my work, which is I'd love to talk to more and more customers about next year, mm-hmm. but they're too busy thinking about this year. So
which I
get it. I completely understand.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to digital twin technology, since we last spoke, I think it was about a year ago or so when I last had you on here, how has that landscape changed? Who are the primary players with digital twins?
Yeah, so I think most people know the term digital twin now, whereas right. before, perhaps, you know, it was still relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in most of the discussions that we have with our customers now, we don't really have to explain what it is anymore. Although we do have to explain, though, our particular flavor of that mm-hmm. type of technology.
Right,
but as a concept of building a digital image of a real situation, you know, there's so many examples of that now, and so many people are using it. You know, the virtual reality goggles and everything else. You know, I think there's just so much awareness now of this artificial world. But the same challenges still exist today as they always did, which is does a customer invest in the software and the platform to do it themselves,
mm-hmm.
which involves quite a heavy lift from an IT perspective, or a big data storage facilities, create your own data lake. And as I was talking about, those different sort of systems of record, those different elements of data all need to be brought into that one place.
Right.
Harmonized, joined together, cleansed, and then presented in a meaningful way. Mm-hmm. So customers can absolutely do it themselves. And I've spoken to many that have done that,
mm-hmm.
have created their own analytics suite and digital twin, and also use it for planning purposes too. So they really are leaning into that sort of forward-looking planning and scenario testing with some pretty sophisticated tools to be able to sort of try to dictate or understand exactly where their business is going to head given certain criteria. But other customers are still, you know, but it takes time. That sort of make or buy decision, if I make it myself, if I build my own digital twin and data lake platform, well, it takes time. It takes time, effort, and people.
Absolutely.
And money, of course.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to an outsourced organization such as us that plug and play, you know, ours exists. We've got many, many customers on our platform. We can demonstrate that it exists. You can use it tomorrow if you want. With a pinch of salt, it does take a little bit of time to set it up, but it's available to use pretty quickly as opposed to trying to build your own environment and plug that in. And the same challenges around people exist as well.
Mm-hmm.
Staff come and go. It's very difficult to retain the right type of people and skills to be able to build or run these kind of tools. Whereas we have our own sort of our own dedicated team that are available to scale and support customers. And actually, that's an interesting dynamic. We've found that more and more in that customers are using us to supplement what they do as opposed to be a direct replacement or a complete package for them.
Interesting.
So it's more like a hybrid mole, a hybrid role, hybrid mole, whatever that may be, a hybrid role where, you know, they have some sort of analytics capacity, but that's probably more around their internal mechanisms around manufacturing, production, things like that. Mm-hmm. And from a logistics point of view and a transport point of view, they're utilizing us like a subcontractor to bring that specialty and that those analytics into play.
Fascinating. Okay, so digital twins are it's not just, I guess, in the context of our discussion, you know, we're talking more for the analytics of your supply chain, but even when it comes to the way a company operates itself, digital twins are a valuable tool.
For sure.
Right.
And digital twins are used in the aircraft industry and many industries and manufacturing, you know, because they're monitoring machines, they're looking at the engine in an aircraft, and they're more real time. They've got sensors that are monitoring the performance of that environment. And then when something goes wrong, they're immediately triggering an alert or an alarm mm-hmm. to tell you something. Mm-hmm. You know, you're driving along in your car and the dashboard, a little yellow light will apply on your dashboard. That's a digital twin monitoring the real situation. If you're really sophisticated, such as, I don't know, sort of a John Deere tractor, then not only will you have a light that appears in the dashboard of the tractor, John Deere corporate will also get a light on their control tower,
oh, wow.
which will tell them that that tractor has got a problem, and they'll be alerted to that situation. So you say this technology and digital twins are uniformly used in many, many industries.
Going back to this this notion of like a quiet time or repositioning period for companies, it sounds like companies are likely to avoid risky investments because, you know, things are on fire. They're operationally focused, you know, so new technologies are not a priority, but it's more about maybe cost control or something like that. This might be a little bit heady, but what role does innovation play then in supply chain management during these periods of repositioning? Does it kind of take a backseat, or is there still stuff that's kind of fermenting in the background?
They have to continue to think ahead. Mm-hmm. You know, it goes back to those points I was making earlier about the world is going to change in 2025, guaranteed. New governments, new tariffs, new situations will need to be taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Woe betide a company that doesn't think about this now, because they are making sourcing and business decisions for the next 6, 12, 18 months,
right?
At a minimum. So if you haven't taken these things into consideration, it'll be a huge, you know, curveball, because you'd made a plan and something dramatically has changed, and then you're going to be right at the back of the line.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're then scrambling to sort of make changes, given that, I don't know, let's say a fresh piece of legislation just came in and you weren't prepared for it, hadn't thought about it, that could be a major disruption to your supply chain. And everyone else who thought about it 6 or 12 months ago, they may not have done anything about it, but they had a plan.
Right, right.
And then when it happened, you know, they could react.
Right.
They'd already talked to a supplier about plan B or even plan C. And so they were prepared to switch things, as opposed to somebody going, oh no, what am I going to do now? And then start to try and make effect. So, yeah. Life's challenges, of course, the daily challenges are always a challenge, are a problem. But you always need to be thinking ahead, as we all do in life, you know.
Yeah, and just a good reminder to come up for air every once in a while, sounds like.
Yes, yeah.
Stay aware. Maintain situational awareness.
maintain it, you know, when you're the day-to-day stuff is, of course, important.
Of course.
It takes priority, but you also need... If not you, then somebody to be thinking about the future too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So with then today's, you know, supply chain landscape presenting a lot of what if scenarios, I mean, you're hearing a lot of what if scenarios, and we see a lot of those what if scenarios take form. They actually happen, you know. What kind of words of wisdom, I guess, could you leave with companies to help them prepare for these uncertainties and make I guess, like, better decisions, data-driven decisions?
Well, the first one is good luck, because you're not quite sure exactly, you know, what is going to happen tomorrow. But, right. Joking aside, trying to be a little bit more serious.
There are
things that you know of. So, you know, your current business,
right.
How resilient is your current business? That would be the sort of the first topic of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
If you assume that your business is not going to change in the next 6, 12, 18 months, which it will, but we'll come on to that. If you assume that it's pretty static,
mm-hmm.
Then how resilient is your supply chain today? Mm-hmm. Is it working well? And if not, how can you improve it? So that would be sort of the first point to look at. The second point then, of course, is what does the future look like? There are known things in the future. You may know that you're launching a new product. You've got a new customer in your business, and that's huge, and therefore it's going to be more volume, more products to a certain part of the world. So there will be certain things within any supply chain, within any company's supply chain, that's going to move the needle that you may know is coming over the horizon. You'll need to plan for it. What would that look like? But there are other things which are going to come over the horizon, which you don't know about, which you can't plan for. But if you go back to that, is your supply chain resilient? Can it flex and move and expand and contract based upon sort of the punches that it takes? Then you should be in a pretty good place. The third element, I gotta mention it, is the environment.
Yeah.
Is the environmental agenda. Still very much in its infancy. You know, people have been talking about it for a long time. More rules and regulations and legislation is now being brought in, mainly around reporting and visibility and understanding,
mm-hmm.
scope 1, scope 2, scope 3. So it's definitely starting to become more of an agenda topic. Still haven't found customers making meaningful decisions from a supply chain point of view,
mm-hmm.
In order to be able to truly move the needle on carbon footprint. Lots of discussions around perhaps alternative fuels and shortening the supply chain, that nearshoring that we were talking about earlier.
Right.
Of course, that has a carbon benefit because you're not moving product so far,
mm-hmm.
and consuming carbon. So that tends to be where the majority of the conversations come into play. People are still trying to figure that out. Some bold targets are being set by a lot of CEOs around the world. Carbon neutral by 2045 or 2055. But I think most companies are still trying to figure out, if they're here today, how do they get to carbon zero in 20, 30 years time?
Mm-hmm.
And they're still trying to figure that out, but it's still very early days. And most governments are still sort of trying to figure out, how should they legislate for it? And how should they enforce these targets that are being suggested and put down? So yeah, a very interesting topic. Still no clear answer to it, but definitely part of the dialogue.
Another thing that comes to mind too is AI. You know, what changes that can bring? What thoughts do you have around that?
It's a huge topic. I think, what is the definition of AI?
Right.
And we could probably fill up another podcast just talking about that, although I'm probably not the right person to ask that question. But, machine learning and technology, of course, is developing at a rapid rate, always mm-hmm. has. Mm-hmm. So, AI is definitely going to play a part as we go forward in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I think people are still trying to figure that out. There's still a lot of unknowns, a lot of security, cybersecurity issues around those as well, and
right.
data privacy issues that all need to be built into that thinking as well. So still very early days in that space. COVID taught everybody a lesson, which is be ready to change quickly. The supply chain is not constant. It is unconstant. It's moving. Things happen. Ports get blocked. Ships break down in certain places. Aircraft have challenges. Ports have challenges. Infrastructure, rail has challenges. There's always challenges. And who knows what the news tomorrow will bring as far as a disruption around the world, you know, a natural disruption or a man-made one. So, you know, it's who knows what the challenges will bring.
Yeah. And what's really important is what can you control?
Yes.
Yeah. What can you control? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, Ian, it's always a pleasure to have you and to learn a little bit more about what you do and then just what you're thinking about when it comes to topics like this. So I really appreciate the time.
Pleasure, Chris. Yeah, it's always a pleasure. I look forward to number four.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you've got questions or want to learn more about today's topic, check out the show notes for more information. And before you go, make sure you're subscribed on whatever podcast app you're using so you won't miss the next episode. To learn more about Expeditors, you can find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or simply visit us at expeditors.com. Take care, and I'll see you next time.